Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Mr. Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick and Gabriel. Doing well, thanks. Looking forward to unpacking the latest news with you guys today.
And also by Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you?
Good. Good to be with you guys. I was a little bit sick the last time. Finally downloaded the latest version of whatever the dreaded Lurgy is, and feeling much better, and happy to be back in South Africa, and straight into the thick of things.
Indeed. And in the thick of things you were indeed today, because you were in the Joburg CBD, keeping an eye on the DA's, Power to the People March, which was a protest against load shedding that went to Luthuli House, the ANC's headquarters. So I watched a little bit of it on live streams, and I followed some of the news on social media. There were fears of violence before the march went underway, and that because the ANC youth league said they were going to be there to meet the DA. The DA marched to that square just outside Luthuli House. It's like slightly down the road, and they seemed to manage to get there without too much trouble. Both ends of the street outside Luthuli House, where a group of ANC people, many of them carrying shamboks, did arrive. They were cordoned off by the cops. And last I heard, though, as even though the march is over, there seems to be some trouble brewing there. There were some ANC Youth League people who said they had been provoked by the march and now wanted to respond. And I was just told by someone who's at that march that they've been told they cannot leave on foot. They need to be picked up in buses because there are ANC people around in the streets who are threatening to attack them. Gabriel, what did you see when you went to have a look at how things were going there?
Well, I suppose the first thing I saw was the Joburg CBD, much as left it, as it were. I think before one sees the Joburg CBD, one sort of smells it. As the door opens, opened into a puddle of definitely.
And I'm sure it's not so nice in the heat at the moment either.
No, it's sweltering, it's pungent. And you know, it also inspires me with hope pretty much every time because, right next to the, literally put my foot into like a kind of yellow luminescent puddle. And then after that onto the curbside, onto the pavement. And there are people trying to sell beads, trying to sell t-shirts, trying to sell socks and feather dusters. Ended up buying a feather duster for 15 Rand. Really good looking, real feathers kind. It's an amazing deal. And an extra 5 Rand for the car guard. Super. Okay. So I like that kind of part of town, but then you get to the politics side and that's not as fun. I suppose in a way I was surprised at how many DA people were there, blue shirts. I expected far less. My ballpark estimate was around 5,000. Before the show, Nick was showing an aerial picture.
Yeah, I did a very rough sort of estimate and it looked kind of to me like sort of 4,000-ish maybe.
But definitely more than the ANC, which was also a surprise. ANC guys, I mean, the first ANC dude I saw was carrying 20 shamboks and kind of did a little run after me. I didn't change my course or direction at all, but it's a little...
it's going to be difficult to attack you with 20 shamboks.
Exactly. He had too many shamboks. He was the guy carrying the shamboks to the other. If there were 20 dudes each with one shambok, I think that would have been alarming. Instead, it was kind of, it really was. He was like smiling, it's like kind of the funny thing about
sort of play, right?
Play is the word. And, it's, I think the most striking political line is the ANC, its official line is, the ANC headquarters is not ESCOM headquarters and the ANC headquarters is not a playground. I think it's really weird that you have to sort of try to convince people that you're not a playground. Of course, the ANC headquarters has been in disarray for a long time. Staff haven't been paid for months. There's totally their pensions, the legal obligations to pay into a pension pot have been completely not met for over a year now. I think that the it was a hot day. I saw some borderline violence. There was the ANC side kind of came forward towards the back end of the DA blockade as John Stiernason finished the sort of keynote address for the DA side. And there were some DA people who wanted to rush through where the police had three massive sort of water cannon trucks that were kind of separating the two sides. And one or two kind of made it, but they were called back by their colleagues. The media all went through and saw on the other side. And, you know, just to wrap my, you know, personal experiences, I thought that that what people were talking about was very interestingly different. So when I got there, when the ANC had come now to the DA, the song that they were singing was included the lyrics "Fog off DA," and "Panzi down with the DA racist party." So, you know, it was abrasive. It was robust in the sense of, you know, quite butch or macho. You know, frankly insulting and straight to playing the race card. There was also a poster up that, you know, kind of, I don't know, the only ANC poster that I could see was, I'm trying to sort of remember it because it was sort of bizarre. But it didn't really seem to have much to do with the issue of the day. Whereas, you know, anyway, it was insulting the DA and calling it a racist party. On the other side, the DA speeches were, I don't know if all of them riled the crowd up so much, but they were very commonsensical. They said, you know, we want power, we want electricity, we want jobs, we want to be in a business friendly environment. We don't want cadres to be stealing money by inflating contracts and leaving us literally in the dark. Lots of variations on that. And really kind of trying to talk up the journey to the next election and the journey of the mayors that were all present are already making in terms of trying to get their cities off the load shedding schedule. So, you know, I don't know, I don't want to sound too much like a DA fan. Certainly not. I actually saw someone who said, hey, you're from the Daily Friend, we'll never get you in a DA t-shirt, will we? And I said, no, never. And he said, yeah. But, you know, I think there was very much like one side talking about problems and solutions and the other side trading in insults, threats of violence and kind of slurs of racism.
Interesting stuff. Now, I guess the real question, and Chris, I'm going to put this to you, is whether you think this is really going to make an impact. There were some journalists there, so they're clearly going to get some good media coverage. And I think that they also plan to do a whole bunch of simultaneous marches across the rest of the country in other cities, although I have no idea how well attended those were. I saw some photos on social media that looked like, you know, there were a couple of people here and there. Do you think this is going to change the tenor of the debate at all, or do you think it's just going to be sort of, you know, forgotten by next week kind of thing?
Well, as a good forecaster or future plan, I'm going to try and give you scenarios, so I won't commit to one or the other. But I think the narrative has been set and is clear and concretized for a lot of people that load shedding has been caused by the governing party, by their ideas and their policies. So the worth I see in this is more in terms of giving momentum to 2024 and the election. So I know some commentators and some in the media can, so I'm not going to say all mainstream media, that's way too easy a narrative, but some can get cynical and say, oh, this is just a political trick kind of thing. The DA is a political party. They're going to engage in some kind of displays like this, try and create momentum, try and show their supporters that they're trying to do.
If I may go on a slight tangent, I always get very amused by when people write, you know, this political party is just trying to score political points. Well, yes, that's kind of what they're there for, in a sense.
No, like 100%, absolutely. So let's see now what momentum this gives. You can see, for example, and not to shill for a particular party, but you can see in Cape Town just in the last 2 days how there has been progress now in terms of, sorry about that, there has been progress in terms of trying to get an element of feed-in tariffs going so that people can get off the grid, they can try and feed in electricity into the grid, that sort of stuff. So you've got on the one hand the practical solutions of governance and municipal governance. On the other hand, you've got this national talking point and the people are talking about it. So you've got to now, number one, give your supporters momentum and a reason to show that you're serious. You've organized a good march now, it seems, by all accounts. And then secondly, you've got to try and show how you're going to implement policies to reverse the damage that has been done. So I think it's a multi-pronged strategy, and I think kudos where it's due. Some progress is now being made. Let's see now over time how it filters out. Again, the destruction we see now in the electricity market with Eskom's decline and just people not being able to get electricity from competitors, this is the result of years of the wrong policy. So it'll take a term to turn around. Let's see if the positive effects filter down over time.
Can I just riff on something Chris said? Sure. I think that partly the DA, ANC, EFF asymmetry is that you can just see when you go to any protest that the ANC and the EFF are involved with, how meme-y they are, how good the mood music is. Because the mood music was sort of defined by the apartheid era struggle. And so you've got these struggle era songs, and everyone knows those songs. Their parents and grandparents sang those songs. They learned those songs as children. And there's a passion and there's a recollection of real emotional potency that sort of goes along with the thing. And together with that, there's real star power. When Julius Malema shows up in the CBD, I've seen him run a few stages there. Thousands of EFF people are thrilled to just be able to say, I saw him there in the distance. But that comes with both of those things, the really good song singing together, the really passionate feeling, and that really excited feeling of proximity to this star power kind of factor, comes from repetition, comes from over and again there being these opportunities for fans of that party to get together and exhibit their enthusiasm, and then for others to kind of feel the contagion of it. And I think that the DA is always going to be a bit different, because its message is not of revenge. It's not bloodlust. It's not blood and soil politics. It's not, you know, we're going to take it all away from them, which is ultimately the message of the EFF and the ANC. Instead, it's a message of, you know, conservative growth, of peaceful prosperity and progress. And, you know, that's always going to seem a little bit more buttoned up and sober and somber. But it can be really exuberant too. And if you look at sort of politics in civilized countries that are succeeding, you see that people really do get excited by, you know, the notion of a slight shift in a good direction. So I just think that the more the DA does this kind of thing, the more it kind of allows its supporters and its leaders to exchange in the music, really, of politics, which matters everywhere, but particularly in South Africa. The other side of the musical metaphor is of harmony, not just between the DA's leaders and its followers, but all supporters, but also between the DA and the other coalition partners that are looking to have a major national change in government. I think, Nick, to answer your question directly, is this going to be here this week, forgotten next week? That question, more than anything, is probably up to the coalition partners. I remember the Zuma protest. I went to the first Zuma Must Fall protest. There were 200 or 300 people at that protest. The next week, there were 10,000. And the week after that, there were 12,000.
Some of the other parties may now march, and not just against load shedding, not just to Eskom, but to Luthuli House. Do you think any civil society will do that?
You know, AfriForum is trying to launch a nuclear-powered program. It'd be, I think, directly in their wheelhouse to try and get a supporter base peacefully out there. And we've seen, you know, Tsenekal, we personally saw their capacities in that regard. I think Solidarity is in a similar position in terms of civil society. I'd love to see the kinds of people who are behind the Save South Africa movement try once again to empower South Africans. I was in a foreign country just yesterday, and I was explaining, you know, I'm going to land from the airport, go to this protest to say we need electricity in South Africa every day, all day. And a German said, you know, gosh, how funny that I can kind of understand the need for that protest in a German context, because the Greens are so powerful that some of them might be on the other side saying, no, you don't need electricity all day, every day. So what's in South Africa? Who's on the other side for you guys? Well, I was like, well, for us, it's like the guys are like, you know, the corruption is worth it, basically, because it's sort of corruption is fundamentally anti-apartheid. or whatever the ANC's argument is. So, you know, we really do live in a country where I think it's important to say we need electricity all day, every day, because we don't have that. It's a real debate, and I think any civil society organization gets behind it. But from the coalition partner side, I mean, you know, if I was the IFP right now, I'd be kind of biting my ginger biscuits and thinking, sure, I wish I'd had a cup of tea yesterday and thought of joining in here. But I think the first follower principle is great. I think whoever gets behind this first to say, look, this is not just a DA issue, this is a South African issue, is going to get a lot of kudos, a lot of respect, and can make a really important difference in terms of making this something that sticks.
It remains to be seen. But I must say, I like seeing people protesting load shedding. Hasn't been nearly enough of it. And good stuff there. Okay. CADA deployment. So the DA took the ANC to court on the issue of CADA deployment, saying that it was an illegal policy, that the Zondo Commission had found that it had caused enormous damage to the country, and that it should be declared completely unlawful. The government and Cyril Ramaphosa, the presidency itself, opposed this application and is defending CADA deployment in court. So the argument put forward by Ramaphosa's counsel is that there's nothing, it's not a government policy, CADA deployment. And their counsel went on to say, the advocate Les Morrison said, there is no statute that says you cannot have a CADA deployment policy. The DA wants the court to interpret the Constitution to come to the conclusion to say, in effect, that the Constitution says you cannot have a CADA deployment policy. There is no explicit text to that effect. The DA's counsel was talking about how deeply enshrined CADA deployment was in ANC policy and how that was reflected in the government. He read from the CADA deployment policy, quoting it where it says that it seeks to deepen the hold of the liberation movement, the ANC, over the levels of power, including the entire civil service. And then he quoted from it saying, we want to emphasize they want to take hold of the entire civil service. That's the goal. Gabriel, you were amused by the president's argument.
Dude, it's amazing. I mean, I think that there's two ways to think about it. The one is just, in layman's terms, there is a CADA deployment committee. It's not a secret committee. It is true that in all its time under President Cyril Ramaphosa, he was the head of the CADA deployment committee for years and years and years, for 5 years. At no point when he was the head of the committee can he recall there ever being minutes. I think that was a submission to the Zondo Commission. Then it turns out that there were some minutes, but conveniently there were not minutes for the key meetings where the worst CADAs were deployed. So a funny thing about the CADA deployment committee is, like so many
clearly
things
the secretary
run by the
needs
ANC,
to be changed on the CADA deployment committee.
Incompetence is like, but incompetence is useful because it is, you know, a way to cover your own tracks, I guess. If you don't have the competence to make them, there's no paper trail because no one knows how to write anything down. So, you know, that's one kind of defense. Okay, so they're not literally using that defense in court, but that is a kind of defense that has de facto played out in court and in the court of public opinion, just by being too incompetent to record anything at some of the meetings. They have attempted to exculpate themselves. In terms of this argument that the CADA deployment committee that we all know exists and that we all know has affected who has been selected for the civil service for very important positions, director general positions, for example, that has no bearing on the Constitution has no bearing on that because that is the selection is ultimately by the government. And the argument is the CADA deployment committee only recommends people to the selection committee, but the selection committee actually has to make the final decision. It's sort of, sure, you know, it just doesn't make any sense from a layman's perspective. And if you get into it from like a legal perspective, I've sort of bounced around. I've watched the Judicial Services Commission debate this quite a few times. And I saw the debate take place in the Zondo Commission and after the Zondo Commission, sort of with talking head, sort of Wits professors and stuff going up and being asked about it. And it just doesn't get, the more you get into the details, the less good the situation looks for the ANC. Legally speaking, there are enough established cases where courts have been asked to apply the notion of selection, the notion of choosing someone for a job. And, you know, if there are inputs that take place outside of the official pipeline that affect who gets chosen, but it's outside the official pipeline, does that count as something that can be taken up for review as according to the standards set within the pipeline? And the courts already said yes, right? Because the point of having rules for the pipeline is to make sure that you get the best person for the job, basically, or the right person for the job, because there'll be some other considerations as well. But it's to have those rules to go from, you know, the pool of candidates to the final choice. And going around, you know, using some unofficial arm to reach around the process just doesn't make any legal difference, actually, to the question of whether the rules apply to that process. The rules really do apply to that process, because it's their purpose to secure the office from corrupt selection processes. So I don't think that anyone at this stage, that can't be their final argument. My sense is that they've got another argument, which is that you can't prove that this has made a difference. And there, I suppose what they're really asking the DA to do is come back in the reply papers and really just mine the Zondo report for as much already officiated evidence as there is. And there is plenty on ESCOM, for example, and CADA deployment, but in general on CADA deployment in government to show that the ANC's claim is false. And I kind of think that it's a gamble on the ANC side, because what they're really trying to do is say on that front, you know, here's an open goal for the DA to shoot through. You know, just prove that this has actually harmed people. And the proof's already out there. So then it just only can possibly work. The ANC strategy can only work if most media ignore it and the message doesn't get through to most people.
So, Chris, interesting thing here. You know, we talked about this yesterday on the show with John and Michael, that once again, the ANC is kind of playing this sort of weird semantic game of saying, no, we're the ANC, we're not the government. When you get an RDP house or a grant, then the ANC and the government are the same thing. But when it comes to important legal questions in court, no, suddenly we're very separate. The party and the state are very separate things. I must say, you know, not really having a good understanding of law, when I first heard about the DA's attempt to challenge CADA deployment in the courts, I thought, you know, this is never going to work. But what Gabriel says suggests that there's maybe more of a case here than I thought. What do you make of all this?
I'll just say, if we are to believe President Ramaphosa, and indeed if the NEC is to believe him, then he doesn't really believe in the National Democratic Revolution. So maybe they need to recall him then, because that's one of the central sort of tenets and requirements, is for the ANC to take charge of the state and state apparatus and levers of power and transform society according to what the revolution requires. So by definition, you'll need to deploy cadres in civil society, in arms of the state, in state institutions, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe he has something to answer for at the NEC. But in all seriousness, I think there's a strong case to be answered for here. And I also think it points to the proof being in the pudding, or at least the proof being in the eating of the pudding, in terms of what has been done over the last sort of 20-ish years with where you can point to cadres being deployed. So you might not find the minutes, for example, but you can see very objective, clear links. If one still believes in the word objective and sort of objective truth, you can see those, the clear, very clear links and establishments between party and state. So this is what the ANC always intended, what they were aiming for. And I think hopefully this case and others similar to it, or at least in other avenues, will establish what CADA deployment is always meant to achieve and how in some ways it has been achieved.
Can I just say something about that? Because I've discussed this quite a bit with Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, and I think, you know, it's good to share the message. One of the concerns here is that the DA's case can be successful in court. It seems to me like a slam dunk. You never really want to say that, but I think it's really, really solid in court. And that, you know, some people will ignore the facts, But some of them will leak through too into the discourse once again, and that'll be harmful to the ANC. But cadre deployment has already been successful. You can kind of do away with it now because so many cadres have already been deployed into so many SOEs, into so many organs of state, and into so many boardrooms. And by cadres, I mean people with a political ideological commitment to the National Democratic Revolution. That it then becomes self-sustaining even if you do away with the central committee. So the process at this stage is ready to evolve even if you take that arm of it away. A little bit like the lizard, cut away the tail, it's fine. And the other part of the concern is that BEE is a major problem. I thought the DA's rhetoric a little bit today in Joburg was a bit weak on the BEE side of the Eskom problem. If you look at the Zondo report, Brian Malefe took away black companies, replaced them with other black companies that on the basis of BEE, he would so he's punishing good black companies and replacing them with Gupta companies that were just eating the money. But using, slightly different scorecards at different points to achieve this, and in between shutting down coal mines at a time when it was very important to have them, which is always supplying power stations with the necessary fuel to keep the business going, and then blaming the rain. One of the major problems is you can kind of do away with cadre deployment and keep BEE. If you put in the procurement bill that's in the pipeline, that would actually be worse. So cadre deployment's an issue, but it's not the whole caboose.
No, I think that's a very good thing to keep in mind. Changing the bigger rules of the game as well. I'm sure we're going to talk about what looks to be the impending collapse of the Joburg coalition, which will probably happen next week. We may talk about it tomorrow. We'll see how things are going. Also, there's some stuff about Cape Town buying electricity now from people who have solar panels and stuff in their house. They seem to have removed the regulatory barriers to that, and they say that they will soon be giving people money for supplying the city with power. But for the last story, very briefly, I just want to talk about this very little curious case that I noticed in reporting yesterday. So I'm going to read you two headlines, one from Eyewitness News, which says, Soweto's services can't just simply be written off, Lusufi tells residents. And then a story from Times Live, which said, Lusufi wants to write off Soweto's unpaid 5 billion rand Eskom bill.
Yes.
They were covering the same event.
And when wait, is he writing quote, it off or is he not writing it off? Like, what's going on?
So when you read the quotes from Lusufi, you can get kind of the opposite impression. He sort of tries to have his cake and eat it too. He says, until we remove the debt of electricity in Soweto, we are not going to resolve the problem of electricity in Soweto. This is Tanyaza Lusufi talking. We must agree on the process because you can't hide behind the poor when you are employed or run a business in our township. But then he also goes on to say, if government takes over Eskom's debt, Eskom should write off the debt of poor communities. The Minister of Finance went to Parliament and said that this government is taking over the debt of Eskom. And it is our view, if this government is taking over the debt of Eskom, by extension, Eskom must remove the debt from our communities because the state has taken that particular debt. Then he went on to say, we can't remove the debt forever, and we must ask communities whether they want prepaid or a flat rate. Now, he was being a weasel there because prepaid is often quite unpopular, especially in areas where there's low payment. And so everyone's going to say flat rate, obviously. Chris, what do you make of this?
Isn't there a national event happening? It should happen by June at the latest next year. It's where you go to a ballot box. I think this might be linked to that process, and we'll hear more of this confusion coming from political figures. I think it might be related to that.
Gabriel, it really seems here like he's trying to simultaneously say, we'll give you the big old bribe of making sure you don't have to pay back your debt. But also at the same time, those of you who have money have to pay off your debt. But also at the same time, the state owns the debt, then you don't have to pay it off. You kind of can take whatever you want from this.
Yeah, I mean, it's 5 billion rand, which is also sort of part of the speech. It's like really 5 billion is what a lot of Soweto residents are coming away with. Okay, we owe 5 bill, and this guy's saying that can all go away. We don't have to pay that back. And at the same time, you know, don't worry, we're not going to run out of money and become like Zimbabwe. We have to print money because we've borrowed so much money and written off the debts and so on that it's gone. I think that this again comes down to really this just stark contrast I felt today, where, you know, on the ANC side, it really, more than ever before, I've been to quite a lot of ANC protests where there have been intelligent speakers making, you know, often convoluted socialist, race nationalist points. But like, you know, you could imagine a really smart 17-year-old who's, you know, still a bit naive, but like knows all the big words, writes an A+ matric essay in history, kind of going along with all of that. And
there goes my power.
And now the speech today was just like, fog off DA, you racist party. Like, that is all it was. And the DA by contrast was just, you know, using a lot of simple words to talk about practical solutions to very urgent problems in a very straightforward way. I think that the ANC's best chance is to say it louder, to say it prouder, to bang the drum harder, and to deafen any need for reason. You know, reason itself is like often talked about in enlightenment terms, something in the light. In the darkness, you can really have a good jam. Most nightclubs are pretty thwacking with the lights off. And I think that's the mood music that the ANC needs to ride if it's going to hold on to its majority.
Well, exciting year ahead of us, I think. As we are seeing some interesting battle lines, as you suggest. But anyway, let us call it to a close there. And we hope that you enjoyed the show. We will see you tomorrow on the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone.